Sleep, Shit, Repeat is an independent podcast. We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land we're recording on today. Just a quick content warning, this episode features discussions of self-harm.
I think I'm feeling very defeated at the moment about it. Like this morning, Lenny, I scared him when I yelled and then he said, "Where's Daddy?" Because he was scared.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I don't know what to do. Like, that makes me a piece of shit. Welcome back to Eat, Sleep, Shit, Repeat. I am Kelly McCarran.
And I'm Kiri Searles. And Kelly, the review that you just told me about, can we talk about this for a second? Because I love a review or feedback that is like a compliment and then like a little suggestion.
It's a sandwich. It's a compliment sandwich.
And we just have to
it's
shout it out.
It's how you manage people good.
Because if this person is listening, which they obviously are because they're obviously a shitter, they just made our day.
They really did. So this is Jess. So she's written, "Love, love, love, but I absolutely adore you two and always relate to your content about motherhood. You are both so vulnerable, easygoing, and I feel like I'm less alone listening to both of you. So a big thank you. But can I please just ask that you stop swearing? Because I listened to this with my almost one-year-old and she's just picking up on her first words. I know that your couch line is a swear word, so it's kind of hard and maybe I should be listening to this without her, but having to choose the times when I listen to the pod is an inconvenience. Understand if you can't censor it, but I just thought I'd throw the suggestion out there. Anyway, as I said, love the pod and really thank you for the great content. Honestly, Jess, this made our day."
And it's so funny because this is constantly the conversation we have when we are editing.
Oh, well, it's you mainly going, "Oh, it was one of my resolutions to swear less this year."
Which I'm not doing very well at, but sometimes I'm like, should we bleep it? Should we bleep it? And Kel is the one that is usually against bleeps because I can be quite annoying as well.
Personally, I find the bleeping more offensive and it's like you know that that person swore anyway. So it's like,
yeah,
it's
but
like
the double. Little one-year-old doesn't. They're like, "Oh, cool, bleep."
Yeah.
But otherwise, they're cool, fuck.
Do you know what? Maybe Jess needs to listen to Carly Sophia's episode talking about the driver's license words.
I always told them that swear words were driving license words. So that's what I called them. And I was like, "Look, you can't say these words. That's a driving license word. You don't have your license, so you can't say it, but I do, so I can."
So true.
Oh, being the safe really space. Explain that to a one-year-old,
can not
you?
Really, not really. But we are making a conscious effort.
We
and
are.
We try to only use the language when it's very necessary, when there is no other word in the English language to accurately articulate the emotion that we're feeling.
Yes.
I would say.
And maybe we'll put a poll on Instagram because if it is just me that's offended by the sound of a blip, we could implement them.
I think we should really throw it out to the shitters.
And just see what they
can
say.
Can we call them shitters? I don't know if we can.
Oh, see, even just the nickname, it's all swears.
Well, if you haven't picked up on it already, the vibe today is truly unhinged because Ask and You Shall Receive Shitters, we are talking about Rage.
So out of all of the requests for episode topics, we have been inundated about rage or postpartum rage, mum rage, whatever you want to call it. And I have always felt like rage is kind of just a really normal part of human emotion. And as you'll hear later on in the episode, I have had rage issues my entire life. However, they've obviously become a lot more transparent as I became a mum because I can't hide them as much. I can't hide the feelings as much. And I have a very small person that is struggling to regulate his own rage. And if you imagine my brain is a boiling jug, it spills over a lot easier when I have someone pushing my rage buttons without meaning to, of course. So when I popped up a form on Insta about rage and got hundreds of responses, over 80% of the responders actually said that they weren't an angry person prior to having a baby, which I thought was so interesting.
Yeah. So it doesn't discriminate against like pre-existing rage issues. It's just something that
can
develop
come with becoming a parent. So I just thought that was fascinating. So I also asked for a rating, like how angry you get on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 just being like, "Oh, for bleep's sake," see what I did there, Jess?
Bleepy, bloop, bloop.
Every now and then, or like that real white hot rage, like toddler tantruming about
like you
something.
You need to squeeze something.
Squeeze something because you're just so angry on a 10. So 29% of you were sitting at an 8 and 28% of you were sitting at a 10. That is a lot
rage.
That is a lot of deep rage. Very strange that people just skipped 9. They were either 8s or 10s. And yeah. then like, you know, a couple of other numbers. So I asked people to share the experiences, and I'm going to share a bunch of them anonymously, of course, on socials, because I think that it's really useful to feel less alone.
Even if those people who just responded see the other stories of rage, that's going to make them feel better.
Yeah. It's such a gift when people share, and I hope that people know that. It makes me just love chicks in this community we've built so much because, oh, it just warms my heart. Everyone that responded, you were all the same. And I say that to make you feel better so that you know that you're not alone in your rage.
Yeah.
You're not alone in your unhinged moments, and you're actually very normal, and your behavior is so similar to so many other mums that wrote in. It's quite embarrassing, really, and I think that's why it's one of those really shameful subjects. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's not as embarrassing to be depressed or anxious, but for some reason, rage is really, really embarrassing.
Rage hasn't really had kind of the glow up that mental health, other aspects of mental health have had.
So basically we need to give rage, like get a few influencers to talk about it.
Like I do think that is happening because we are trying to always normalize aspects. But I think a lot of the time because exactly what you said, people are a little bit embarrassed about it because I think no one wants to be an angry woman.
That's exactly right. So no one wants to be that person that can't control themselves. No one prides themselves on losing their shit. So, and it's mortifying because I think owning up to the worst parts of ourselves.
But it's the hardest thing to do. To really, really talk about how unhinged
you
are.
Blackouts, yeah. Because it is way more unhinged than other things.
It invites judgment.
Yeah.
And I think we're so conditioned to, as women, make ourselves smaller, make ourselves quiet.
And appear more palatable.
Yeah, exactly. And to actually open up and say, oh, I'm quite ugly.
Yeah. My insides are ugly. I had a ex-boyfriend and we'd broken up and we were talking about something. I was single and on the scene and he said something about boys not knowing the real me. He was like, you come across as like this really giggly, upbeat person, but there's a dark lord living inside you.
It's like, thanks a lot.
Well, I mean,
you just read me.
He was not wrong. So later on the episode, we will be hearing from the shitter that I ended up picking. She has her own experiences, like all of us, but she's also a clinical psychologist. So I just thought she'd be able to make us feel a little bit better. She relates to us. She can also hopefully give us some tangible reasons that we are feeling this way and possibly some tools to help that aren't like, count to 10, as my nanny used to say. I was like, come fucking count to 10.
Yeah. I've made it to 3 and now I've thrown a chair.
Yeah, I've made it to 1 basically. But first, let's chat about our own experiences. Key comes across as pretty level-headed. And it's probably a little bit frustrating sometimes because I'll be like, oh, Key, you're not even a little bit unhinged compared to me. But the thing is, you're like, I am. But inside.
Yeah,
you go very internal. And I would like you to talk about it from someone that is holding a lot more of it in than, say, someone like me. This really beautiful appearing attribute that so many of us have.
Yes. Well, I've thought a lot about this, specifically my childhood as well, because I remember being very angry a lot in my childhood with my grandparents, like not what they were doing or anything like that. But I remember that is when I felt the most angry, is when I was with them. And something clicked for me the other day when we were speaking to Jen Muir on that episode about gentle parenting. And she said, often mad
masks, sad.
Masks, sad.
We say that mad is sad's bodyguard. So mad can come and sit in front of sadness and shame to protect them.
A light bulb went off because I remember being such a really sickly, sweet little girl who was just a goody two-shoes, basically. Like, I never wanted to do anything bad, probably also because I was raised a Catholic and that Catholic guilt gets you real bad. But I just remember being sickly, sweet and a goody two-shoes. And then I remember this, like, cloud of darkness coming over me and having this, like, anger. And I would have angry outbursts and I would cry and wail. And for a long time, possibly even until, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we were talking to Jen, I just thought that there was something like deeply wrong with me. But when she said that bad often masks sad, especially with children, because children don't have like the capabilities to understand emotion and how to articulate them in that way, I was like, shit, I was a deeply hurt and sad child without the tools to understand why that was. And in this case, it was my anger and rage. I think, really did mask my sadness. But because I was that good little Catholic girl and, you know, you suppress your feelings, I was very closeted, angry person and would have deep feelings of anger and rage, but not often would people see that. You know, a few select people say, like, my grandparents probably have seen that. And Charlie, in the, you know, 8 years that we've been together, has maybe seen it twice, where I have like screamed in frustration about something and being deeply, deeply upset about something. And that's when he said, hey, this is like not normal behavior and I'm like worried for you, kind of thing, which was fine. We were able to like sort that out. And I have, you know, the tools now, kind of, I'm still kind of repressing those feelings. But when it comes to Rue, and I do get angry and frustrated in those times, looking after like a toddler that is beautiful and just trying to explore life and test boundaries, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I see red. I get really annoyed sometimes, especially if I'm not feeling good or I'm having a day of grief or I'm really stressed about something or I'm just feeling shit about myself and she's not behaving in a way that is helpful.
Palatable to that.
Yeah, I do have those moments. But very recently something happened and it was a moment where I got very close to letting that out and kind of just being like, stop it. And it was almost at the time where I was going to let it out that she switched her behavior and did something really sweet. And I remember the feeling. It's like the same feeling of the release when you release rage, but that feeling of not releasing that rage and being able to move through that moment, it was like a rush of emotion washed over me. And I was like, wow. It taught me like, hey, there is a good reason sometimes to hold it together because it's reactive and impulsive to let rage out sometimes, I think, in that way. I think oftentimes when I have let rage out or when I'm by myself and I let rage out, there's a lot of shame that comes afterwards and it doesn't feel very good. And you're like, I wish I could take that back or I wish I didn't do that. I wish I didn't act in that way. But to be in that moment and be on the tipping point of letting something out, the environment or the situation changing and me not having to get to a 10 and the relief I felt good.
Yeah.
In that moment. But that's probably the first time that that's happened to me where I've been that angry and hasn't come out or hasn't ever come out with Rue, but that's the only time I've been that close and the relief I had that it didn't. And I think that in one way made me feel good because I was able to have like a handle on my feelings and somewhat regulate myself. But on the other hand, I thought like, fuck, that was pretty close. And what happens if next time I'm not, like next time she doesn't switch her behavior at the right time or whatever, like I'm going to feel really fucking shit. And I don't ever want to feel like that because after having that aha moment the other day about that darkness and that cloud that came over me, being the sweet, innocent little girl, am I going to fuck her up?
Like, yeah. And I know that that's your fear now, that she's going to get that darkness over her. But I think that, yes, there's nurture and nature, but I do think that some things like that, you could have gotten the fog and the darkness anyway, even if you grew up in the happiest family with two loving parents. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it is true. I think it's just sometimes really hard when you're working through such big emotions and topics and, you know, ways of parenting. Like these things pop up where you're like questioning your own childhood. And I'm already like, I feel like it's so boring because I always talk about it, but it's like, you really do start to grieve the person that you could have been.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we've talked about this with in other situations where, you know, you receive some information and you're kind of just like, well, that's fucked. Like, I could have been such a different person. Mm. But, you know, you always have to remind yourself that you are who you are in spite of those things happening.
Yeah.
And you have, you know, the things that you've achieved and et cetera, et cetera. But it is hard. Like, I think this is why rage is also really hard because it stems from...
It affects our past and our future as well as our present. Yeah. It's one of those things and it's really hard because it's not like you can just snap out of feeling rageful.
No, there has to be a release. That's the thing with rage, is like it has to come out somehow, somewhere. But when you have a kid...
It's not like you can just go for a run and leave your kid when you're feeling...
Well, and it's not like you can even... Like you could probably scream into a pillow or something or like throw something around.
Doesn't help, but still really loud.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's true. Still so loud. It barely muffles it. Do you know what? Screaming underwater is probably...
I have screamed underwater before. As like a kid, you know, you're like, nah!
Oh, yeah, I did it last week.
Oh, nice, nice. Talk me through yours, though. Like, we're kind of varying degrees, but I know that the reason why we knew that this topic was so good, even before we put out the little questionnaire, was because in our very first season, we touched on postpartum rage, and a lot of people were like, thank you for even mentioning this as a
thing. Mentioning rage, yeah. Because it's something that I have struggled with my entire life ever since. Like, some of my earliest memories are rage loss moments. Like, I remember these girls were picking on me and they just would not stop and they were antagonizing me and I ended up losing it. I was in kindergarten and I was so embarrassed about losing it. And I was like five. I didn't even know what these emotions were.
Yeah. But you knew it was bad.
I knew it was bad. And that's one of my earliest memories with rage. So it's been something that's been with me my entire life. And I had such a problem with bullying in primary school. And a lot of it was, I mean, there's absolutely no excuse for bullying, but I was a weird kid and I would get to a point where I'd completely rage out when people were bullying me and absolutely just lose it instead of acting, I guess, in a more socially acceptable way.
Yeah.
And in high school, like, it continued. I think as I got older, I got better at masking it in front of people, but it would come out at home a lot then because I'd been bottling it up all day.
Totally, yeah.
Like, you know, and it's all fun and games now. Like, you know, Sandy will love telling the story about the time in French class when I got so angry that I literally pegged a chair at her. You can laugh about it now, but I was violent. And I was a violent child and teenager most of the time, not to other people except for my siblings. Like, I used to, and my sister will talk about this, like, I was violent with her. My brother was younger and probably didn't antagonize me as much, but my
sister.
Also
a boy, I think sometimes.
I used to kick him in the nuts though, like, I'll never forget. Oh, like, God. I was a horrible sister growing up. I was the sister that no one ever would want. No one else was also allowed to pick on my siblings. I will have
right,
you. Yeah. I always had their back
if
need be. But I was a horrible sister. My brother has actually talked about having to do his own work as an adult because he realized that he was still striving for my approval as an adult.
Really?
Never mum and dad's, mine. Because I was the one that they were scared of.
That is so, because I don't have siblings, so that is just so interesting to me. I feel like we need to do some episodes on siblings or something.
Sibling trauma.
Yeah.
We could get mine on.
Yes.
Like a Dr. Phil episode.
Oh my God, Dr. Key.
Oh my God, I feel like I would lose a lot of people, I think, if my siblings came on and gave them that real eye-opening.
Not if you have siblings. I think that people get it, right?
Yeah.
And because a lot of people I know, like, I'm like, oh, you've got such a beautiful relationship with your sister. And they're like,
now.
Oh, yeah, now.
Yeah.
It was like WWE SmackDown.
Literally.
Like, and I'm like, oh, wow.
And okay. I don't think people believe other people when they say, no, it was physical.
Yeah.
Like, you fight with your siblings. Like, my dad would be like, take it outside. When she got old enough to actually fight me back, because she was like a bit of a wimp, to be honest. Like, just, she was just always like, and then, but she got to an age where she used to pull my glasses off so I couldn't see.
Well, was this before or after you threw her against a wall?
Oh, listen, the wall throwing was a lot. So I've always had rage issues, the point of those sorts of stories. I got a lot of it out. I was very good at sport, got a lot of it out in sport and exercise. However, contact sports, that's why I wasn't really allowed to play it that often, because I'd often get penalized for throwing balls at people's heads.
Yeah, right. I just cannot imagine that. Like, I've never seen...
You've never seen me rage.
I know. And the same as, like, I'm sure you probably can't imagine me raging.
Yeah, I can.
You can?
I can imagine anyone raging, to be honest. You know what?
I can't.
It was quite funny, though. My sister came and watched me play netball not long ago. It was really nice.
Oh, yeah.
And she actually said to me after, she goes, I just was laughing the whole time because we've literally just, you are now me. Because I was like running around the court and like making friends with people and just having a yarn the whole way through and like having a laugh and, oh, great. Score, great shot or whatever to the other team. The last time she would have watched me play netball was when I was a teenager and I'd probably be like screaming at the ref and
but can I just
throwing
then
balls at people.
Point out that they've had a lot of growth then? Like for someone that is so, and you're getting to talking about this, but someone that feels so deeply bad about how rageful they are and the postpartum
I'm
rage.
Much better, but also you'd hope to be much better at 35 than 15. Do you know what I mean? Like,
totally, but
you'd hope
still
to have learnt a little bit.
Well, not everyone
that it's
does.
It's not okay to hurt people. Oh, I don't think, okay, this is going to make me sound like a psycho. Can I just clarify? I don't think it's okay to hurt people. I'm not.
No, of course
this is all very shameful
yeah.
that I'm admitting to being quite a violent person when I was younger. I also grew up like in a bit of a rough era. You sort of had to be up to stand up for yourself.
Hold your own.
I'm not going to get too much into it, but when I was a teenager, it was actually a counselor for anger management.
Okay.
Because I had done something at school. And she once said to me, do you ever hurt yourself? And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, you know, like cut yourself or burn yourself or scratch yourself or anything. And I was like, why would anyone do that? Like I was just so confused. I was so sheltered. I was like this, you can look stuff up on the internet. I didn't know.
Yeah.
She goes, oh, some people like do it because it makes them feel better. And she wasn't.
So she gave you the idea.
She gave me the idea, which I mean, obviously wasn't, but I'd never heard of it. Anyway, and so after that, I started self-harming and that carried through until I'd say my mid-20s that, and it was always like just so shameful because I was just so embarrassed, but my parents would never have known. I think they found out. I mentioned it once and never wanted to talk about it more with them. And same with my sister. I think I just touched on it once and never got into it because I was just so embarrassed. And I still am in a lot of ways, but it's also just part of my history. But yeah, so there would have been about 13 years of like pretty consistent bad self-harm as a way to release that white hot rage because it worked for me.
Yeah.
It worked. I'd be shaking with rage and just so full of this fury.
Mm.
And instantly it would just be like this orgasm, like a sneeze kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, okay, it's out. It's done. And
well, it's building to that kind of
crescendo
moment,
and
right?
that was yeah. what would get it out. But I did, I think it was when I met Luke, I thought I can't do this to another partner because that's a pretty
intense
horrific,
thing, yeah.
intense thing. And there was a situation, an incident, I should say, with my ex-boyfriend when we were living overseas together that I will never forget his face in that moment. And I thought, I cannot do that to another person. So after I like said yes to being Luke's girlfriend, I pretty much, that makes it sound like I did it for a boy, but I didn't. It was more so that I just couldn't do it for another person.
I don't think so. I think you did it for yourself in order to have a healthy relationship with someone that you'd met that you really liked. Like
yeah.
it's not for a boy, it's for your future with that person.
Yeah. I think that I've always been very aware of my impact on other people
mm.
and not wanting to hurt anyone around me because I'm very aware of how loved I am.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and ever since becoming a mum, I can't reconcile that I am just this angry person and I were like my dad would get so angry that he would chase me through the house and I'd be screaming with fear. He'd chase me and then like I'd lock the door and be holding it so he couldn't get in because he was just so angry.
Yeah.
Because I'd push him. I'd push him. I'd push him. I'd push him. And he'd get to that point. I don't want that for Len. And I've got yeah. my dad's personality and I've got his rage and I don't have that. Like the way that my psychologist has described my brain, I do not have that boiling point. She described it as there's no way for my brain. Most people will go from 1 to 100 and boil.
Yeah.
I'm often sitting in the 90s or I'll just go from 1 to 100 with nothing. Because Luke will be like, you have 10 personalities.
Yeah, I think you're highly strung.
I'm so highly strung. And it's like these feelings come out that he's like, what? Where did that come from? Over nothing. And then the next minute I'll be happy again. And he's just like, what? You literally have 10 personalities.
I think I can relate to that though. I think being highly strung but quick to get over things is it's quite hard for normal people to understand. They're kind of like,
it sounds
what do
ridiculous.
You mean? Because it sounds so crazy, but I also just think it's when you have lived in that state of mind for so long, it's a coping mechanism that you're quick to get over things. But going back to what you said in the introduction about how in the questionnaire a lot of people came back, 28% of people said that they weren't angry before
80%
they...
80% of people. 80% of people said that they weren't angry people before having kids. And that makes me feel horrible for that 80% because at least this is something I'm used to.
Totally. And would you say that it's gotten worse? Because I think in my instances with Rue, like I don't have postpartum rage. I just have anger and I'm scared for that to come out ever, and I don't want to, like, you know. So mine's a little bit different. I haven't suffered from postpartum rage, but you did suffer from postpartum rage, right? Or would you say it's a continuation of it?
No, I'd say it's just a continuation.
Ah, okay.
It's
interesting.
Just that there's probably more things at the moment now that will set me off.
Well, there's a whole nother person.
There's a whole nother person that doesn't care about trying not to antagonize me because he doesn't understand. But I think I'm feeling very defeated at the moment about it. Like this morning, Lenny, I scared him when I yelled, and then he said, "Where's daddy?" Because he was scared.
Yeah.
And I don't want that. I don't know what to do. Like, I'm so highly medicated. Got a psychologist. I have a psychiatrist. I have a counselor. Like, I'm doing everything and nothing is helping. And I just don't want this for my baby. Like,
I know.
Oh my God. It's just, and Luke gets scared. And I've asked him, I've been like, "You don't actually think I would hurt Lenny?" And he's like, "No, I don't. I just get scared when you do rage out." Like, that's so embarrassing. That's so shameful. Like, you're going to try to defend me, but that makes me a piece of shit. Like, it just, don't try to defend me. I'm not even just saying how I feel. I'm saying that's the truth. Like, if your child is a little bit scared of you, your husband's scared of you, my 6'4" husband, I'm a piece of shit.
I wouldn't say that you're a piece of shit. I feel like seeing how upset you are makes me want to say lovely things about you, because I think that when you are in a state of darkness, feeling really negative about yourself, it is easy to spiral.
Yeah.
And I think that at the moment you are in a constant state of spiral because you think so low of yourself, when I just want to be the person to remind you that you're doing a lot of things right.
You're trying my best.
You're still showing up every day, even though it's been really difficult. Lots of people don't show up or can't show up at all.
I think I just force myself because I know that it makes you feel better long term.
Yeah, and I think that, like, life is hard. Like, yes, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I'm not trying to defend that. Like, yeah, we've got to get a handle on this completely. Yeah. But you're doing the things. It's not an overnight fix. You're unlearning a lot of stuff. You're also trying to do that while teaching a little human to regulate, which is, like, challenging a lot of stuff. It's bringing up a lot of stuff at the same time. Like, it's coming from all angles.
Yeah. And on top of that, trying to work, trying to keep a household somewhat tidy, trying to be a good friend, trying to be a good
100%
a better sibling than I was growing up. And I think it's just, shame is such a gross feeling, isn't it? It is the grossest feeling in the world. And do you remember at the end of last year when I had my last, like, proper rage blackout?
Yeah, I do remember.
It was, I don't know if I touched on it at all.
I don't know. We didn't speak about it on the pod because you felt too ashamed.
Oh, okay.
At the time, you're like, "Oh, I don't know if I want." You were very sheepish even telling me
what happened.
Yeah.
Well, I am mortified now, but it's more like, as I think my psychologist did help me with that. She was like, "Kelly, no one wants to behave like that."
No.
And she reached across the room and actually, like, put her hand on mine. She goes, "No, I want you to listen to me. You did not mean to behave like that, because no one would."
Yeah.
So, long story short, apparently Luke had sensed that I was on the brink all day.
Yeah.
People were walking on eggshells around me a little bit. And then, like, the stupidest little thing happened, and I was playing a board game with my mum, and I just, like, flipped the board game up and lost it. And when I say lost it, I don't just mean a cute little fuck you all.
Yeah.
I mean scaring all of the kids. Absolutely unhinged, walking around the house. My body was vibrating. Like, anyone that could see me could see I was physically vibrating. Actual steam felt like it was coming out. I couldn't stop moving. Like, I was then out the front just, like, shaking every part of my body while I was, like, walking, just trying to expel some of the energy. And I just was just so full of this burning rage. And then it left. And I just locked myself in the car because Luke wouldn't let me drive. Basically, I was like, "I'm leaving."
Yeah.
And he, like, stole the keys, and I was like, "At least let me
sit in the car.
And at one point, he's, like, trying to actually physically hold me down. He wasn't scared in that moment, though. I think that he...
oh, he's protective. He's seeing you in pain. Like, I think we feel shame in those moments, but same as when Charlie said that, like, it hurts me to see you that distressed.
Yeah.
Like, I think that they are like, I want to save you. They're not frightened. They are scared for you, not of you.
And I think he was just scared about what I would do if I did. And anyway, and then like after the rage had subsided, like I was just in the car and the shame, like it was hours of sobbing.
Yeah.
Hours of sobbing in the car. I think at one point I did vomit.
Yeah.
Like out like into the bush because I was just like so full of, and you know when you're crying a lot.
Yeah.
I just have never felt like, well, not for a while, like just that shame afterwards. And it's like a hangover. It's worse than a hangover. And my dad, even though the majority of my anger had been directed at him, I guess because he is me.
Yeah.
He was the first person. Like my mum and my sister were basically like so angry at
me.
Like Emma's, you know, she's like, I understand that you didn't mean to do it, but you terrified the children. You ruined everyone's night.
Yeah. It's harder for them.
Horrible, basically. Yeah. And mum just, I don't think she just really understands it. She doesn't have rage problems, so she doesn't get it. So they were like just so cranky. But even though my dad had been on the receiving end for the worst of it, he was the first person to be like, please just come inside. And then just act like nothing was wrong. Because he also was like me and doesn't actually want to ever talk about anything. So he's like, let's just pretend that never happened and move on.
Yeah, exactly what we said before is that when you're that highly strung and easy to tip over the edge, you do get over things quickly. So he's like, oh, you know, it's all right, love, don't
literally,
worry.
He was like, move on. He sent me a message like, you've been a psycho since you're a kid, Kel. It's fine. But it's actually probably the same, like, you know, this afternoon when I see Len, I'm not going to like hold it against him that he was mean to me this morning.
You wouldn't.
Oh my God, the way that I talk about him, he was mean to me this morning. He was bullying me.
He woke up at 5.
He did.
It was a personal attack.
And then he was just like so mean and I had such a bad headache and I was like, Mummy has a boo-boo, please.
I get it. When you were talking about your dad and how he is also rageful, my mum is very, like, quite an angry person and very quick, like got a very short temper. And I think that was like kind of the catalyst for cutting her out of my life was because of how much anger I held
towards her
and having contact with her because that relationship was never going to bring me any peace. All it did was bring a lot of anger and bad feelings and resentment. And I just thinking then about it, I think my life has been a lot more peaceful.
Yes.
Since cutting
that
her
out. That makes so much sense.
So I think that sometimes, like in my instance, I think a lot of it stemmed from having that person in my life and trying to make that person be something that they weren't and constantly feeling inadequate and then mad masking sad.
Yes.
You know? So I think in my situation, that has been really healing. But I think in your situation, I don't think it's actually one thing that you can attribute to. I think it's just something that.
I think it's circumstances plus personality type.
Yeah. Which is really difficult.
The way my brain works.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll tell you what. Sorry, Jess, but it's fucking debilitating.
Oh, beep.
Beep. It's horrible. And I would do anything to stop being so full of rage. But
it's gonna,
hopefully Brooke will have some insights.
She will. But Kel, also, I think, you know me, it's going to be okay.
Oh, God. It's going to be okay over here.
It's
very nice given you're like, you're a very upbeat person.
Well, I think honestly, it's like, what are you going to do? Like
I know.
No, but like everything always seems hard when you're in it, but somehow you get through everything.
Yeah.
And I just think that you are actively trying to make a change.
I am, and I have been.
Exactly. So I think that it will be okay.
Now we are going to hear from the lovely mum of three, Brooke. And Brooke happens to also have over 15 years of clinical and research experience. She completed her Master's of Clinical Psychology at UNSW.
Wow.
And she did a PhD.
Oh!
At Sydney's Brain Mind Centre.
A PID.
She's got a PID. And she used fMRI, I don't know what that is, but it sounds very fancy, to examine how the brain is impacted upon by specific mental health conditions. And when I was reading about her research, I was just like, oh my God.
That is fascinating.
Can she treat me, please? No, probably not.
Sign me up.
Let's get her on.
Can you start by telling us about your own personal experience with postpartum rage?
Gosh, where do I start? One topic to speak to is that of community. You know, like when I had our first baby, we were the first in our kind of network of friends to have a baby. So I kind of went into it kind of very confidently and didn't kind of expect it to be so hard, which might sound very silly, but that was me. So yeah, I think it was this huge disconnect sort of in terms of finding my feet. Like you've got this baby and you were previously a confident person, and then suddenly you're just thrown into the deep end of your own choice. So there's a lot of like complexity to this, and there are a lot of like seemingly opposing but equally valid truths that you can choose to do something, but it can be really, really hard. And then the sleep deprivation got me, where I really struggled. And we had a pretty good sleeper, but still I really struggled with my own postpartum anxiety, that I really struggled to rest when the baby was resting, you know, and all of the well-intended advice in the world directed at me was around, you know, needing to slow down and not doing so much when the baby was asleep. I should be, you know, sleeping too. But I just found like that was when I wanted to see my friends or talk to someone who, you know, wasn't another mum in the trenches. So I found it quite jarring, and I found it hard to change gears. And then you added a second baby into the mix 18 months later who had silent reflux and didn't sleep. And then it really amplified because, you know, we hired sleep trainers and saw pediatricians and given a lovely message that you're doing everything right. You've just got a tricky baby. Just keep going. And what do you do with that? You just have to keep going. So, you know, in the concept of self-care, you know, mums, I think, and I'm talking about mums because we know that mums are, the vast majority are the primary caregivers. Mums are told, you know, you need to practice more self-care and take time out for yourself. But when you can barely string a few sentences together, you don't feel like socializing if you're that tired. So then your resentment builds and you have these moments of mum rage that are really normative and understandable. So such a like an intersection of lots of different factors.
Something that we rarely talk about is being the first in the group to have kids. And I know that I was one of the last. And then when I was in the trenches talking to my first ones, and I thought that they had it all under control, but they were like, I was dying. Like I was really suffering. I had no idea what I was doing. And that's why I'm showing up every day for you. And I'm like, wow, like I can't imagine how hard it would be to be one of the first, because you'll literally have no benchmark. But then also I wanted to kind of get your perspective on being a clinical psychologist and understanding this professionally. When you were in those moments of mum rage or reflection after, were you in a state of mind enough that you could identify what was happening, or did it take you a while to kind of, I don't know, give yourself the grace to be like, oh, I am actually experiencing, you know, some rage here?
I don't think I had the insight at the time because I was just, yeah, I think, you know, when you're in it, it's hard to think with clarity. You know, my husband's really supportive and he was great at normalizing it, but I was almost rejecting of it because I think there are a lot of shoulds for mums. I should just be able to get my act together. I should just be able to push through this. I'm a person who pushes through. And what is it now that's different? You know, I remember going to speak to my GP about it, and my GP was amazing at the time, but unfortunately really invalidating, because they were like, look at how well you're doing and look at how, you know, you're put together and look at your beautiful baby. Yes, but I don't think that how I'm feeling is maybe within the scope of normal, but there is no such thing as normal. So yeah, I think in a way being a clinical psychologist made it harder because you feel like you've got on an intellectual kind of rational level all of the skills at hand, right? But you're in the trenches with everyone else, like you can't wear two hats concurrently. So I think in a way it made it a bit harder for me because I had a lot of higher standards of myself that I should be able to draw on these skills, and I'm not.
That's the reason why I wanted to ask that question, because I was pretty confident that you wouldn't have been able to, because it doesn't matter how much information you have or how many tools, like when you're in it, you are in it. Anyone listening knowing that you had all the tools and the knowledge and you were still struggling as well, bring some comfort in some way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think particularly with the first, like, you know, for people who go on to have other babies, you know, some people will just have one child. You know, one of my sisters has made a very proactive decision to have one child in a very healthy way. But when you go on to have, if you go on to have a second child, I think that qualitative difference then, as much as I was far more sleep deprived with our second baby, I was more confident in my skill set, so to speak. And I had a template or a blueprint of what kind of what to expect, what might be kind of normative for me, and also saying yes to more, not saying yes to help. We were in Sydney. We didn't have any family in Sydney, for instance. So we had to construct the help around us. So the second time around, and then the third time around, I was way more proactive in doing that because I'd learned, like, you knew, like, this is going to be a vulnerability for me. Therefore, I need to show up for myself.
But to anyone that's like confused, maybe at home, so when I put out a form on Instagram, one of the questions was about like if people had had any rage problems prior to having a human, birthing a human, and 80% said no. So can you just describe what postpartum rage is and why 80% of the responders, like why people are angrier postpartum?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the factors is we have to consider is, first of all, is sleep deprivation. I think it's commonly cited, but I think underestimated in terms of its impact on our general mental health. You know, the first line treatment for depression, just standard depression, is exercise. The second thing we look at is sleep. You know, so we can't underestimate the impact of cumulative sleep deprivation. The second thing is that we need to consider other hormonal changes that are occurring, you know, with rapid fire sequence in that immediate postpartum period. And then the next thing is, you know, we typically don't experience these moments of intense rage before we have a baby. You know, some of us might, but it's new to us and it's foreign because this is such, if you're in such a state of flux, there's no way you can understand what to expect until you're in it. If someone describes what to expect of yourself or of the postpartum period, you can't articulate it. And so I think it's that going through this massive life transition and you really can't prepare for it. You can try, but it's quite literally a shock, both emotionally and physiologically and neurobiologically. You know, you're rapidly learning, you're co-regulating with your baby, you're trying to feed yourself and potentially feed a baby in whatever means you can. And it just, there's just so much happening that, you know, I think it's actually really normative and typical. And I just want to validate again that this occurs. Really understandable.
So interesting what you said about the sleep deprivation, because that is the part that is just debilitating. Lots of light bulbs going off over here. Don't mind us. Do you think there's a correlation between postpartum rage and an increase in women being diagnosed with ADHD or OCD and ASD postpartum?
I mean, the short answer is I don't know. For people with a kind of confirmed or suspected neurodiversity, where they might experience it, mum rage, more frequently is that we know for people with ADHD in particular, there can be greater incidence, just baseline, so pre-parenthood, of sleep difficulties, you know, so that might leave a person more vulnerable, but I don't know that there's any research on it, certainly none that I would be aware of or be able to say confidently, yes, there's a correlation. But I think one thing to flag is that for people who have neurodiversity, then it's meeting yourself where you're at and playing to your strengths would be really important, you know. So, you know, for someone who might have the ADD inattentive type, you know, just trying to work on strategies, if you have the privilege of working with a psychologist, working with them to identify almost like ways to better structure or tailor your day, because we all know when we're going to have time is when we're most productive. So trying to like stack the day so that can you like meal prep for yourself at that time, or can you like, is that when you might be able to go to the gym two mornings a week? I don't know. But just thinking about just small things often, ways just to tailor your day so you can almost protect a little bit of time for yourself if that's even feasible.
Because it's always nice in theory, isn't it? But then your kid gets sick or, I don't know, the house floods or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So as a clinical psychologist and as someone who has been through it yourself, what are some things that we can do at home to try to help when we're feeling that postpartum rage? Because obviously there are a bunch of different treatments, but can you walk through like treatments and also stuff that we can do at home for anyone that maybe can't access those sorts of professional treatments? Because I think it would be very helpful, and it's very defeating if someone's just like, count to 10. I can't. I'm already blowing my lid. 10. I'm at 10 already. Yeah. I was at 10 minutes ago.
The first thing I would say just practically is that if you have a network of friends that you can talk to and be authentic and name what you're experiencing, particularly if any of them are parents themselves, that is the first thing I would suggest, is not to buy into this narrative of shame around what you're experiencing. Because, so as you said, you had 80% of your respondents say, yes, this resonates, I've experienced this.
I wonder if they would admit that publicly though. But then I also think that's why, I'm not just tooting our own horn, but like if someone does want to chat, then pop it anonymously if you don't want to own that name or to your feeling. Like you can pop it anonymously in the group or message me on Insta and I can raise it anonymously, because it is hard if you... I remember Key messaged me about something when she was a new mum, and she was like, I'm messaging you because you're going to be honest with me. And she'd messaged two other mum groups and no one had even responded to her question. And I just like was like, yes. And I just sent her like a link to the Safe Sleep 7 resources type thing. I was like, if you're going to do it this way type thing. But no one even responded. It's like, how is that helpful? Because if she's going to probably then end up doing it, like, wouldn't you rather your friend do it the way that is suggested?
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's shame. It comes back to that, the whole thing about shame and the way in which we're taught to what emotions are okay emotions to express and what ones we don't ever want to show that exist. We want to suppress them at all costs, kind of thing. And so much of being vulnerable in an open forum is airing dirty laundry almost, you know, like, I think in the last few years, anxiety and depression, we talked about this earlier, they've got a really good PR team. People feel okay with that. Rage, we're not quite there. Turns out we're not there with co-sleeping either. Don't know why, but.
Yeah, what is that about? I mean, a really important point about mum rage is that, you know, it is transient. When we think about anxiety, anxiety tends to be something that is, you know, recurrent and repetitive and might be, you know, we talk about there being a genetic component. It can be a brain-based illness and the environment can switch it on. When you think about mum rage, it is really something that's quite temporally located. That is to say, it's happening in a very discrete time frame. You're going to experience it in all likelihood in those early couple of years where you have maximum physical output, minimum sleep, and you're in this transitional period. It's pretty unlikely that it's going to keep happening beyond that time frame. I would say, I don't know confidently from the literature if it just, you know, would stop after, you know, 3. But the rage part of it, I mean, it's such an intense emotion, but it's incredibly transient, right? But if it were happening recurrently to the point where it was impacting on your functioning, or your partner said, look, I'm a little bit worried about this, then definitely like reaching out to your support network. But I would also say, you know, goes without saying, going to chat to your GP and seeing if you can link in, if you have the means financially to connect with a psychologist. But otherwise, you know, thinking about what are the strategies that you can do at home is sort of thinking about using, there are such a broad range of apps available for mental health. So like they're not tailored to this particular specific niche topic of mum rage, but thinking about tracking your sleep, mood management strategies. When you're in that period though, from a practical perspective, it's about how can you show up for yourself and show yourself compassion in that moment. And if that means leaving the room, your child or your baby is safe, leaving the room. I'm not going to say count to 10 because I don't think it's helpful, but trying to just change the environment, go out into the garden, go out into your balcony if you're in an apartment, just try to ground yourself, look outside of yourself at what's happening around you in terms of the environment and try to practice some grounding strategies. I remember a clinical supervisor said to me, it sounds really basic, but it's actually incredibly effective, is what happens to our central nervous systems when we put on music at these times when we're experiencing this intense emotion. It doesn't feel intuitive, but it acts as a circuit breaker for our central nervous systems. It doesn't have to be upbeat. It can be whatever you can tolerate in that moment, but it acts as a little bit of a circuit breaker for our central nervous system, such that we feel like kind of where our attention's outwards, our attention's directing away from ourselves for even a moment. And on to the next point is about, you know, the mental load, which I think is probably an over-discussed topic, but it is directly related to this concept of mum rage. And we know that women do the lion's share when it comes to the mental load, whether it's the cognitive labor, emotional labor, or the physical labor. And you do not need to be apologetic about initiating a conversation with, if you have a partner, with your partner about how much you're doing. It doesn't matter how much work women are doing outside of our homes, the lion's share remains on the side of the fence with mums as the primary caregivers. So having a conversation, a really calm conversation, not when you're in a state of rage, is absolutely necessary, and revisiting it, because we don't speak about everything we're doing. The average number of tasks mums complete per day just for their home is 59 tasks per day. And that's not child-related.
Oh, my God.
Home-related, yeah. Like, we're not going to tell our partners every time we do something. Hey, I just wiped the bench. Hey, I just refilled the scrubby thing for the dishes. Hey, I've just added something to the Woolies app. We're not going to tell someone every time we do that, imagine. But the load of being responsible for all of the things absolutely depletes us emotionally and contributes to the buildup of resentment, which then contributes to the increased likelihood of rage, of feeling so frustrated and ultimately not seen.
I think I personally find it really helpful to just draw a really firm line in the sand about tasks that I just don't want anything to do with. Like, and I'm just like, if you don't also want anything to do with it, then we're going without such thing, because I shall not be participating. Don't just whinge about stuff. And I talk about this a lot, and I know it sounds a bit harsh, but don't just whinge about having the mental load. Have that conversation with your partner and lay down the rules and be a strong person that can say, I'm doing everything at the moment, but these are the things that are your responsibility, because I will not be doing those on top of everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Something that resonated with me in what you said is to keep revisiting that conversation. And that's something that I learned quite early on, was like, we set up a thing when my daughter was first born, that I would do, you know, wake ups during the week, and then my husband would do the wake ups over the weekend. And then that was while I was on mat leave. And then I went back to work and we were still doing that. And I was like, I'm exhausted. But because I was only back 3 days a week, I kind of like didn't really think about it. And then I was like, oh no, we've reached a new era of parenting. We're evolving. Now we've got to evolve what our division is. And so I sat down and had a conversation, and I was like, I can't keep going on like this. Like, I'm also working too. Let's revisit this. And then we decided to kind of go more even on the division. And it helped in that kind of, we had that conversation. We're like, we're going to have to keep doing these check-ins, because things are constantly changing. And the amount of work that we're taking on in various parts of our lives is ever changing and evolving. So does what we do. And that's just how we've kind of always moved forward. But unless someone tells you that, or you think about it, you just kind of are going until you fall flat on your face. So I think that's such good advice.
And I think that that's just that you're creating the perfect storm there to have rage blackouts, like, because you're sleep deprived, plus you're working, plus you're the primary parent. You're the parent that the toddler or the baby wants when they're sick, or just, you know, when they want a cookie. Of course, you're the one that will go to that. You look after all of the paperwork with everything to do with daycare. You look after all the doctor crap. Like, God knows Luke wouldn't know where the blue book is. There's just so many things that you are taking on that then when you add into it, okay, now I'm back at work and I'm not sleeping still, plus all of this other stuff. That is just, and those are the moments where you are walking past them and they think everything's fine, and you kick your toe and you just lose it.
It's the catalyst.
And you just start sobbing. And you're sobbing your heart out. You end up locking yourself in the bathroom and you're screaming about it. You're hating your life and you're sobbing. And your partner's like, what is wrong with you, you lunatic? Because they're not seeing everything in the buildup that was going on in your mind because you weren't articulating it. They're just seeing someone that just like kicked their toe and then just said,
absolutely. Key, what you described is that, you know, in having that conversation and revisiting the division of labor, so to speak, is that you were seen and you were heard and you felt like, yes, my needs are equally important to my partner's, you know, that this is a conversation that we need to keep coming back to, and it's going to go through progressive iterations, and that's normal and healthy. And that second point about, you know, that the kicking your toe on the door as the catalyst or the straw that broke the camel's back, you know, it just reminds me of the fact that as women, we're tending to have babies into our 30s and for some of my friends into their 40s. And so we are increasingly becoming this sandwich generation where a lot of us are caring concurrently for young children or babies and elderly aging parents with their own health conditions at the same time as trying to maintain a career, because there is, not sure if you guys have heard, there's a cost of living crisis apparently.
Oh my God.
And most of us can't afford the mortgage on one income anymore, right? So we're juggling so much. So it's that buildup of resentment from all of those factors, reasonable resentment, because we're human and we're, you know, resentment doesn't have to make sense, doesn't have to be reasonable resentment. It can just be, but then it just all accumulates because we're human and we can socialize and take time out and practice good self-care, but it can still be building and simmering away in the background because we have our own emotional bandwidth. We have a limit to how much we can co-regulate with our kids or our parents, and that's okay. It's about knowing your own limits and owning them.
Brooke, thank you for making us feel less like lunatics. It's always nice to hear from a professional that there's not something wildly wrong with you.
There is nothing wildly wrong with any mum experiencing mum rage, but I think it's just, you know, it's part of that shared experience, and I think we just need to be a bit more real about it and validate each other's experiences and, you know, equally reach out for help if it's happening at a level where you feel as an individual, as a mum, that it's happening too often. That's when we need to reach out and stick our hand up for help.
Well, thank you so much to Brooke and for everyone sharing their stories. Let's all band together on socials and please don't cancel me for being a violent teenager.
We're not canceling anyone.
It's not
anyone.
Funny. I'm not laughing at that. I laugh like sometimes when I'm like nervous about oversharing.
Also, oversharing is really daunting. So thank you for being brave enough to share, because I think it's going to help a lot of closeted ragers.
Closet ragers.
Closet ragers.
Closet rage shitters. Wow. That's what a delightful sounding bunch. Tag us on Instagram at KeyReese, at Kelly_McCarran, and at ESSR.pod.
This episode was produced by us, your rage-filled mamas, and audio production by Madeline Joanno. Alrighty, bye, shitters.
Bye.